The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
A caller says, hi there. They also protest outside hospitals with placards of babies in the womb. And if I was going in because I was losing my baby, I'd have to pass this. And it's extremely upsetting. They are only being asked to keep a safe space from the entrance. They can still protest, just not at the door. Greg, I got free high-vis from Gardaí last week to give to my home help patients who likes to walk. Okay, that's good. And we'll come back to more of your comments in a moment. But first, we are joined on the programme now by Senator Eileen Flynn. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on the show this morning.
No, it's our pleasure. It's an important issue too. Patrick, a young traveller lost, was shown on RTE One last night. You took part in the programme. And I have to say, running through social media, there seemed to be, and given the subject matter, it's an awkward way of phrasing it, but a very positive response. That I think it opened people's eyes, made people think. Talk to me a little bit about the programme.
The documentary was aimed to raise awareness on traveller mental health and suicide and just mental health issues within our community. One in every 11 deaths in the traveller community is caused by suicide. Traveller women six times more likely to die by suicide than women in the general population, and traveller men seven times more likely to die by suicide than men in the general population. Greg, for years, the National Traveller Mental Health Network and activists like myself have been raising this at national level. Our programme of government in 2020, early February, before they formed the government, they promised a standalone traveller mental health strategy. They promised to invest in traveller mental health. And unfortunately, I'm here in Leinster House for the last 3 years, like a broken record, and there's still no implementation on traveller-specific mental health equality, if you want access to services that ring around support for the traveller community. Like any other community, there's addiction, there's all sorts happening, like poverty as well within our community, but most importantly racism, discrimination, hatred, just because you're a member of the traveller community is absolutely appalling in 2023 Ireland.
It is appalling as well, given the rates, as you mentioned, seven times higher for men than settled men, six times higher for traveller women than settled women. And given the numbers that we're talking of, it should be very easy for whichever department is responsible to say, right, OK, we need a focused response to this. We need to put in specific measures in place to ensure that we're giving people the support that they need. It's actually really quite embarrassing as a nation that we haven't done that already, given the glaring obvious issue that's there.
Let me say, in general, I think our mental health services in this country is not fit for purpose, and that's no disrespect to the staff. That's also a government problem. It's we need to invest in it. We need to invest in our workers. You know, as we've seen to other health, like nurses, doctors, people are leaving the country. We don't have the workers, and that all needs to be dealt with. We need better support, and better support, Greg, for young people in general. Like, we have one of the highest in Europe for 19-18-year-old young women dying by suicide in this country, and that's something that's not spoken about, you know. So I'm not on your show this morning saying that, like, traveller mental health, there's a crisis within the traveller community. Like, I've seen young people that I was born and reared with that no longer is alive due to suicide. Of mine passed away last July due to suicide. My cousins, I have a few cousins that passed away due to suicide. And honestly, if I get a phone call at 11 or 12 o'clock at night from a family member, I do be terrified of my life that it's one of my brothers or sisters that's passed away through suicide. And even within my family, you know, I see addiction. People with struggling with their mental health and their well-being, and they've nowhere to go. They've absolutely nowhere to go, and it's a sin. You know, we've seen part, like, that documentary last night wasn't a big show. you could see in that documentary, Patrick was a young man, a young boy that absolutely loved life. He wanted to be a YouTube star. His mother and father loved him. You'll see he opened up a little parcel for his 11th birthday. He was delighted, and his father telling him how much he loved them. The child was so loved and valued by his parents. But unfortunately, outside of that, the child being as the parents believe, being bullied. And that bullying is just because he was a member of the traveller community. Like, we do have issues within our community, of course. And you see that through all communities. And like, even local little communities in Donegal would have little ups and downs, you know what I mean? And we have it in our community too, where, you know, we're not all meant to think the one way and be the one way. But it's unfortunate that you see a 12-year-old child taking his life due to bullying. We see 13-year-old young people taking their life as well. And it's like, you know, this Patrick story, unfortunately, is not unique to our community, which is extremely sad. You know, I've seen young men at the age of 9 and 10 attempting suicide. Mm.
But I suppose is it part of the not part of the issue as well, but also just thinking in that, you know, if you were to sit a young person like that down, I have to be really careful with my language because of the topic that's here. But I'm on about sort of then you say, you know, about the future. So maybe a person of 13 or 14 who feels different or singled out or bullied or whatever, or held back or oppressed or whatever the word might be, you know, unfortunately, the way society is, they may feel, well, that's what it's like as an adult as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Where I can go, yes. What I can do, who I can get a job, how I'll be treated, what might be what might be said to me. So that's if that's the future that's ahead, you know, I think we have to sort of deal with that as well, because that really probably can be really quite difficult to overcome.
From my own experience, Greg, as like when I was a young woman, you know, I didn't want to be a member of the traveller community. There was a sense of shame until I reached the age of 25 years of age. And that sense of shame came from the rejection from society. You were never going to be good enough. You were always seen as a knacker. You were never going to be anything or valued within society. And like, I lived with those demons, like many young travellers are living with today. And I'm just touching on my own experience. You know, I got out of all that, like, by staying in education, but that's not the case for every member of the traveller community.
Yeah, but still, as a very successful woman, as someone very high up in politics, as someone with a voice, you still are, the first comments that come towards you are still based on your traveller background. I mean, you have to deal with that. I mean, if you want to operate in society, your tax is that you have to deal with being singled out in everything that comes out of your mouth because of your background. That is the way you have to live your life. You know what I mean? And if you're strong, that's fantastic, but you can never escape it, it seems, in this life.
And even sometimes people who come across strong is not all that strong. I haven't put one of my comments on my social media to be just because, you know, no matter how strong you are, no matter where your role is, you know, everybody has demons. And like, after I had Billy, I had very bad postnatal depression, and thankfully there were a light at the end of the tunnel there for me too, you know. And again, I said last night in the show, Greg, like, young traveller children want to be, they watch Fireman Sam hoping to be a firefighter. They watch Paw Patrol, like my children today, hoping to be guards or be police, you know what I mean? And like, children are born with hopes and ambition, and so is the traveller child, and so is the traveller adult as well. Yep. Because I was once that young person that had to hide her address to get a job to get a job as a young person. I always wanted to work, you know, and that's like many members of the traveller community, but some of us have more support than others. And to think in 2023, Ireland, you know, that traveller children are still on reduced timetables, that travellers still can't get a job, like many travellers still can't get a job. And you know something, sometimes even in this job that I have, you know, I'm like, why did I even be why they put myself in this situation, because some days it's better than others. But last night, watching that documentary, seeing Patrick's parents, seeing Bernie Power, other travellers speak, so eloquent, and the show itself was driven by travellers. Mm-hmm. It was, there were no professional from the settled community, and I think that show really caught the heart of Irish okay. society. And you know something, as overall we're caring and loving community, a society as well, and I think that's really important. And I know since last Thursday, you know, there's been a lot of fear within society, and I've heard you speak just there about barriers going up outside of Leinster House, etc. I will say one thing. I was speaking to a woman this morning in the cafe, getting myself a cup of coffee, and she was telling me about some of the staff in Leinster House, the women who's wearing hijabs, people of colour, black and brown people, the fear that they have, just like in any other workplace, and the fear that people are
actually, it's moment, funny, you know? It's quite interesting. In one of the videos that was released to try and rally people onto the streets, the travelling community were singled out in relation to that as well.
Yes.
And there's just one thing I want to clarify, not for you, because I think you know where I come from, Eileen, but just in case anyone picked up, when I said you can't escape, you know, as an adult, you can't escape the abuse, it's not escape your background, it's to live in a society whereby you're not abused because of your background. And I know you know what I meant, but it's just in case anyone picked up that
there's,
up the wrong
actually,
way.
There's no way out, Greg.
So what do we do? Right. So what do we do? Because we've had these conversations, and they're always happening, right? And you were very quick to point out, yes, there are problems within my community, and this, that, and that. So, but how do we move forward rather than you speaking so eloquently, making your point, someone feeling the need to texting in and say, well, travellers are their own worst enemies? How do we move past this, or get around a table, or have a conversation whereby we actually make progress, if you get where I'm coming from? Because it's Groundhog Day.
The 1963 report, the itinerary report, refers to travellers as tinkers and washed and cleaned. Like, I would absolutely encourage your listeners, it's not something that you can read overnight. If you were to take an hour out each day for the next few weeks and read through that report, it would absolutely make the hair rise in your head, you know, because of how you really want travellers to be fake settled people. And again, we have faults in our community, just like in any other in any other community. But the biggest fault is the lack of implementation and the lack of political will when it comes. Like, you know, for the last 3 years, Greg, like, you know, I spoke last night about exhaustion as well. Like, the community is absolutely exhausted. For the last 3 years, I've sat around tables and no point, like, people say to me, you're very strategic, Eileen, you're always very kind, blah, blah, blah. I could get up there and give it loads, and I don't do that because that's what they expect from me. I try my very best to have that dialogue for positive outcomes for travellers and to make life a little bit easier for all of us in society. But again, there's been very little implementation on the 84 recommendations, very little implementation on mental health. And I'm doing the order of business today to really beg the Minister for Mental Health, will she stand by her word? Will she implement what she promised that, and the government promised us in 2020, that national traveller strategy that will help? It may not save many lives, Greg, but it will help to...
Yep, okay, the line's dropped on us there. Okay, unfortunately we've lost the line there to Senator Eileen Flynn, but she made her points very clearly there. And just to let you know that there are 24-hour supports available to you. The Samaritans, 116112, Pieta, 1-800-247-247. You can text about it to text by simply starting a text conversation, hello, to 50808, and Childline, 1-800-666-666. Some of your comments here. Hi, Greg. Harrowing program. President Higgins summed it up as to how it would affect you. Son was at school with a traveller child at national school. Said he was the best, intelligent, good-hearted, just never given the help. Sometimes he would have a scorn on his face, but this was because he hadn't had a breakfast. He was misrepresented as being hot-headed. So would you if you hadn't eaten. That TV programme last night was a hard watch. Poor parents of Patrick, such a loving and caring family, yet he was bullied by anti-traveller abuse at school. People need to cop on and stop racism against travellers. Reminds me of how Irish were treated when they emigrated to Britain and the USA years ago. On to some comments as it relates to our conversation about protests being banned or moved 100 yards up the road from outside facilities that offer abortion services. Greg, the main purpose of these gatherings is to let it be known that there is help available, which would enable them to continue their pregnancy to birth. Mother and baby, government benefits don't kick in until after the baby is born, so it's to let mothers know that there is support, including monetary help available through voluntary pro-life groups. But of course, we also have to, have to also respect that a woman has made that decision for her own reasons, and presumably not on the spur of the moment, that has thought hard about it, perhaps agonised about it, and is not just thinking, oh, I must have an abortion because I didn't know there's benefits available. I mean, we have to give people a bit of credit as well as to the motivation for their decisions. There's no point in showing concerns about the child victims of the stabbing, but turning a blind eye to those going to be aborted. They are all children. Okay, but there's no point also, let me add in, turning your attention away. And we get no messages about this, or not enough messages about this, in relation to the 120,000 children that called Childline last year because they are being abused physically, sexually. 120,000 calls last year. What about them? You know, this is right now, this is our history right now as we speak, and no one is protesting or coming out in the streets or saying enough is enough for those children. I'm sure there are, sorry, but I just don't see the calls and the messages and the text. Hi, Greg, what's the ratio of people having abortion in Ireland due to rape or abuse against those of personal choice? I have no idea to that. Greg, whether one supports abortion or not, it has nothing to do with peaceful protests, lawful assembly. So continuing to ask that gentleman why protest outside abortion centres is unnecessary, and maybe why people don't want to go on the airwaves with you to discuss topics, which I've never come across before. He came on and I was very respectful to him. It's a very basic question as to why, if you can do it 100 metres up the road, why you want to do it exactly outside it. I think that's a legitimate question and might help people understand the motivation beside them. It's not a gotcha question or a trick question. It's simply a question. That's it. Anyway, however, as we've seen elsewhere, they want to say in recent years, the government of the day allows or supports protests that align with them and condemn whatever they don't. Example, the lockdown protests, the Black Lives Matter protests, pro-Palestinian and anti-immigration, etc., etc. Listen, there's something to that. There does seem to be a different approach depending on what the protest might be, but we are talking in the context of last Thursday, riots and disorder, which aren't protests. I've never seen a regular protest dispersed as such. Not off the top of my head can I think of one, but I take your point in regard to that. Okay, let us take a break. I am in studio with Tanya Nikarin, who is CE supervisor. We're talking about the Rowelton Community Employment Project producing a calendar for next year. Good morning, Tanya. How are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for calling in. You don't need those on unless you're comfortable with them on.
Thank you very much. It's completely up to you.
It's just myself and yourself.
Perfect.
Okay, so talk to me a little bit about the Rowelton Community Employment Project. What's the work of it?
Well, the work of the community project has been going on since about 2010. There was a previous scheme there and it looked after ancestry. They did a lot of research around that area. But for some reason, anyway, it fizzled out. And in 2010, then a group of four men put together the CE scheme. Ian McGarvey called a meeting in the town and four men stepped forward, Joe Burney, Edward Diver, John McDade and Tony Boyce. And decided it would be great to support the community, you know, where maybe it was volunteering didn't fulfil all of the jobs that needed to be filled in the town. So from that then, the community employment scheme looked after various activities around the town, from the community centre, the town hall, you know, various environmental works around town and that, the churches, graveyards, a whole vast array of activities in the town. And in 2019 then, I had the fortunate opportunity to come to Donegal and work with a fantastic, motivated bunch of people in the community scheme in Rowelton.
We'll talk about the calendar, because it's a calendar with a difference so the calendar, in a moment. Then, but we'll not go straight to that, if that's okay. Because it's part of a fundraising effort for the Tidy Towns Group. They want to buy street sweepers, is that right?
They do indeed, yeah.
And are we at the beginning of that process, or are we topping up a fund, or what's the story?
We're a part way through, put it that way. So we decided... there's a lot of ways of managing, you know, litter and weeds and that around town, and we would like to do it as sustainably as we can, at least. So we thought by eliminating the use of some of the more poisonous weed killers and things like that, if we managed the weeds and that by removing the soil, you know, and the muck that gathers along the edge of the kerbs, then that would eliminate that problem.
Makes
a lot of sense, yeah. So we set about putting together a plan to do that, and a street sweeper was a really good option to do that, because it maintains all of the verges around town, and again it eliminates all the hard work and the poison being spread.
Yeah, of course, which is good. Right, so on to the calendar itself, because, you know, it is an iconic town. I think we can all agree, Romalda, it's the most beautiful place, and it's one of the towns that we have whereby you get a sense of, I don't know, you get a sense of the history of it, if you know what I mean. You get a, you know what I mean, there's the age to it.
Yeah, as the heritage might have said.
Yeah, but I'm not very artistic and stuff, so I can only go by my feel.
Of course.
You know, but you just feel that there's a connection there to the past, if you
there
know what
is.
I'm saying. And the calendar then is absolutely beautiful, all the pictures you'd expect to see, but there is a difference to it. So talk our listeners through the calendar as I show those watching.
Well, as you said... It is. As you said, it's renowned for being an iconic town. You know, beautiful buildings, heritage buildings, the lovely river obviously running through it,
yeah.
You know, meeting the Swilly. So, and everybody knows it for that. But the people that I work with have such a fantastic sense of humour,
mm-hmm.
and they love their town so much that we decided to bring a bit of a twist to it. So we animated it a wee bit.
Yeah, it's lovely.
And we've put in some lovely scenes all around the town with our own twist of various events that happen throughout the year and occasions and that.
Like, it works on a lot of levels, doesn't it?
There is
a bit of humour there. There is the scenery. There's the personality of the community, and there's a recognition of the stuff that goes on as well. There's a particular lovely photo there with the 118 in the background there. Okay, yep, so that's the type of stuff. Right, and it's not very expensive either. It's only €8, and it's wonderfully produced.
It is. We were very fortunate. Everybody contributed voluntarily to the production
Beatles,
of it.
For anyone watching.
So the production of it was only made possible by, you know, goodwill in the town.
Yeah.
So everybody participated, photographer. It was all done free. So the costs, obviously, we've managed to produce it reasonably cheaply because we aim to maximise our profits so that we can contribute to the townsweeper for the Tidy Towns Group.
Brilliant stuff. And it's always nice when you're asking people to put their hand in their pocket, you're giving them something in return.
For sure.
And it is a calendar for 2024. And even in this day and age, with everything that's going on, you can't beat a calendar on the wall, can
no,
you? You
know, no.
And trying to find the calendar app on your phone can be an issue.
True enough. But it has the iconic sites. It has, you know, fabulous people with humour in town. It's a lovely twist and a great stocking filler for €8.
Yeah. Where do people get it?
So the calendar will be available in all the retail shops around town, I do believe, and in the charity shop. And if you really can't find one there, contact us on our Facebook page, on our Tidy Towns Romalton Tidy Towns Facebook page, or you can call the office. Can I give a number or an email address?
If you wish to, yeah.
You can call us in the office at 074-915-2545, or you can contact us by email at tonyanick@romaltonce.ie. That's tonyanick@romaltonce.ie.
And we have all of those contacts for us, and people, because I say it so often, probably know our number off by heart. And the cost of the calendar is just €8, and all profits go to the purchase of a town sweeper. And for all the reasons you heard Tonya outline, to keep it beautiful as a place to live and to visit and what have you as well.
And to work.
All right, okay. Listen, Tonya, thank you very much for that. We really do appreciate
it.
It's a lovely thing, so go out and get yours. You're covered for next year then, and you also support the CE and the work they're doing. Thanks so much, Tanya. Really appreciate it. That's Tanya and Nicarine there. Back with more after the break. Right, okay. Sorry, I was just standing at the radiator trying to get a wee heat up. Okay, we are joined on the programme now by Sinead. Sinead, sorry about not getting to you just before the news at 10. Just wanted to make sure we had plenty of time. How are you keeping?
Not too bad. How are you doing? Apart from getting yourself heated up.
Yeah, you think the government's using the riots as an excuse to introduce facial recognition cameras. Are you in favour or opposed to this new technology?
I'm not opposed to the technology per se, but I'm opposed to this, and I think it's quite cynical what they're doing. I'm opposed to this facial recognition technology because, as the experts on the subject previously outlined, there's so many problems with them. And the fact that it could also, you're looking at potentially, is it going to be used for mass surveillance? What is it? What exactly is it? They're definitely using it. They're just using it for this. And this has been on the cards for a long time. It's something they've been trying to introduce for a while. And now this is quite a cynical attempt.
I don't want to exaggerate the situation, but is it then a big reach that, every camera, say if you have a Chime doorbell, for an example, it's on a network. Where does this end in terms of, if this is so important, to what lengths would one go to access this type of imagery? In other words, we could theoretically, if the worst come to the worst, pretty much be observed in every element of our lives, effectively.
Correct. And also what you have to think about as well, as you're saying, things are contained in the cloud. Now, with Irish public civil servants' understanding of technology and security and data security, I would be extremely worried about that, because they don't, as I was saying earlier, the people... The people who were organising, the known people who were organising all this stuff, within 10 minutes of that incident, that horrible, horrible incident in Dublin last week, within 10 minutes, they were on their usual channels. These people have had their face all over YouTube, all over social media for years. There is absolutely,
if we're talking about the same people, and I presume we are, you might not like what they have to say. Right, you might not like what you have to say, but you don't want the right to say it withheld from them, do you? Just because it doesn't align with your viewpoints. Because, counterpoint the arguments, get the silent majority, as some might have it, to speak out. Do we really want to deplatform people just because we don't like to hear what they have to say?
That's not what I'm saying at all. And I am firmly, as you know, I am very keen on debate and have a view there. What it strays into, though, where it crosses the line, where there are people organising and they are literally, and if anybody wants it, I'll send it to them. They are saying that they're organising to go down to the town in Dublin, the town centre, to kill any foreigners they see. Now, these are people who have had their faces on the media, on social media, on YouTube for years. These are the people that the likes of, and I just see actually today, Aoife Gallagher, our own Donegal woman, Aoife Gallagher, has a piece in the Irish Independent specifically about this. An expert in the subject. Within 10 minutes, this sort of chat was going on. Now, you can't tell me, anybody can tell me, that wasn't foreseeable. That was not foreseeable, because it was all out there within 10 minutes of that. And with all of the stuff that's been going on for the past couple of years in Ireland, senior Gardaí, and I'm not blaming the rank and file, but the senior Gardaí should have known that this had the potential.
Well, you see, the problem is this:
why are they not tracking this?
There's two things going on here, because the guards said, the senior guardies, you quite rightly made that distinction. They said you could never have predicted this. Yes, you could, because there was
we were all predicting.
Because at 6 o'clock there was videos going out saying, right, tool up, get down here, meet you at 7. Yeah. Now is our time. So if they didn't foresee it, then they don't have the intelligence, and I don't mean that in terms of their brain power, I mean in terms of the manpower, they don't have the intelligence to monitor social media and say, right, lads, we have an issue here because there's a call to mm-hmm. action at 7. So even by saying that no one could predict it, I think it actually exposes, you know, gaps in the policing because they should have seen it because it was forewarned.
It's bad policing. It's, as I said, it is very poor policing. And it's not to do with, as I say, rank and file Gardaí who are doing what they can within the space that they have and within the restrictions that they have. But senior Gardaí should have a dedicated, there should be something dedicated to monitoring these spaces. I mean, this is not brain surgery stuff here. So police forces across the world have this. Why do the Gardaí not? Those are the kind of questions that should be being asked. I mean, as I said, we've been predicting this. I've been on this show talking about this many times over the past couple of years. Greg, you and I have had many conversations about it. So to say it couldn't be predicted, yeah, it's ridiculous. But no,
But also the Gardaí... I really want to be careful with how I phrase this because I'm of a firm belief. I don't like people being labelled because of different views. I think we need to debate and discuss and what have you. But then, of course, there are very extremes extremes that I don't want to go in there either. But my point is that, you know, the government would have had you believe there is no concerns about a different political ideology emerging in this country. The mm-hmm. guards would have said the same. And I've asked that question many times on this show and it was like, well, you don't do it because then you just amplify it or you don't talk about it because it amplifies it. And in other words, trying to pretend that there isn't a growing movement in this country that could be representing the Dáil in 5 years. And I suggested that on Friday and it was dismissed. I don't believe so. I think we're very close to that now. We have to have conversations because it's happening.
We do. And look, you know, there's no point in burying our heads in the sand. Now, I don't know about the 5 years period. And I hope, I genuinely hope that the events in Dublin have opened people's eyes.
Okay, well, let me tell you why I believe that's the case. Right. Because let's say, for instance, two, three years ago, Peter Casey, some might agree with what he says and some might disagree with what he says. But in an instant, on one topic or one, at least in the initial instance, he completely threw that presidential race on its head potentially and potentially could have been elected as well. If a Conor McGregor type person were to come forward who speaks to the masses with a really high profile, I believe that he could very easily be elected to an office. He won't because that's not what his game. And that could all happen very quickly. So I actually genuinely believe that could happen, not this election, but the election afterwards, for the reasons I've just outlined.
I don't know about the time frame. I mean, look, it's a much more crowded field when you're talking about local politics and you're talking about, you know, national politics and TDs and councillors and that kind of thing. So I'm not 100% certain that would be the case within 5 years. But I agree with you in that if we're not careful, we're not absolutely careful, and we're not seeing this for what it is, and it is a danger to Irish public society, everybody in it, because, look, the people with that ideology, they're not good for anybody, us.
But can I just
themselves.
I'm not saying I see that as a danger either. I just see it as a potential reality. I don't know. That's fine, but I don't know. I don't know. There's a lot of people with views that feel aren't being represented by any political party. And they're not they're not outliers or what have you. They could be your family or your friends or my family or my friends. But anyway, okay, Sinead, listen, I appreciate your comments as it relates to you believing the government are using those riotous behaviour to introduce legislation that they wanted to introduce anyway. So I appreciate
your
time.
I'm going to sign off by saying what I usually do and just also shout out to anybody because, as I said, we did have a statement up there after all of those events, those horrible events. We have a statement up on Facebook there from Buncrana for All, and we just want to make sure that everybody is aware that, you know, that is not reflective of the society here, of the vast majority of society here. And I'm going to appeal to everybody, as I always do, please be careful what you're reading on Facebook. Please be very careful. Verify it. Get it verified. And don't fall down that rabbit hole, please.
All right, thanks very much for that, Sinead. A caller says, I heard an interesting comment yesterday that there is no such thing as a settled traveller. You're a traveller, full stop. Would the senator agree there is or isn't a difference? Well, I would. The only if you were to ask me to differentiate between the two, is just where one might live, whether or not you're resident settled in a particular area with your roots laid there, or you are inclined to move around more. That's, and maybe that's me being ignorant or naive, but that's the only thing I thought that reference to. Regarding that documentary last night, one of the problems is that there's no travellers now. They are doing themselves no justice by referring to themselves as travellers, especially when it comes to jobs. They're no longer travellers. They're settled, 99% of them living in houses now. But again, you know, there's more to being a traveller than where you live or how you live as well, I presume. Look, it works both ways. There's so many settled people intimidated by travellers every day, especially older people made to pay for work that's only half done. I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but if this is the constant approach where we have a representative from the travelling community say things need to change, and then we have a representative from the settled community saying, well, it's the travellers' fault themselves. These arguments have been made for as long as I've been doing a job like this, and we're not getting anywhere. Really, are we? Let me see. This three-party government, and that's what it is, a party who have failed time and time again, and now they can't even protect our children. Roll on the next election. Their days are numbered after the terrifying attacks on under 10-year-old children. A new report has found that Ireland will miss EU targets on recycling unless changes are made to our waste industry. The Circular Economy and Waste Statistics highlight reports from the EPA shows that municipal waste recycling recycled in 2021. We don't want most of this plastic packaging, by the way. I think most consumers don't anyway. Céline Horner is Senior Scientific Officer in the Circular Economy Programme at the EPA and is with us now. Good morning, Céline.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So why are our recycling rates so low?
Well, what this report does is it pulls together lots of different waste streams, and we can see in overall that we are generating more and more waste each year. And what we want is a circular economy where we, you know, take materials out of the earth, use them many, many times and recycle and then have minimal waste. That's what we want. So it'll be a circular economy. What we have is a linear economy where we're using stuff just the once, recycling poorly, and then a lot of it's going for incineration. So we really need to change our ways. It's not just about improving recycling. It's about reducing the amount of waste that's generating in the first place. So that's how we're going to achieve our targets, by, you know, reducing the amount of waste. I mean, I heard you talking about consumers don't want the packaging, and that's true. I think we need to do more on industrial size of things, that people are getting less waste into their bins, that, you know, we've lightweighted the packaging, that we've designed our packaging differently, that we've designed our waste materials and how we use them better at the beginning. Because once you have a waste, you have to deal with it. But we need to design before the waste is ever created.
And how do we do that? How do you get there? I know you talked about industry, but in reality, how do we get to that space?
Well, there has been some progress. I think if we look at the ban on the single-use plastics that came out in 2021, there was also, with that directive, there was a requirement to put more recycled material into plastic bottles. So when you buy your plastic bottle now, there's a requirement to have recycled plastic in that, and that creates a demand for more plastic to be recycled. So we need to see more of that. We need to see more products being required to include recycled material in their makeup. Then the material is circulated again, rather than sort of just being used once and, you know, being incinerated, for example. The other thing is that, you know, at the moment we're sending 400,000 tonnes of black bin waste, you know, your residual waste. Actually, I shouldn't use the word black bin, it's your general bin, because I know everyone has a different colour bin.
I understood what general, you meant, if that helps.
Okay. Did you? Thank you. Your general waste bin, you know, 400,000 tonnes of that is actually being exported. Now, for a start, we shouldn't have that much excess waste, because we do have two incinerators in Ireland, but exporting is sort of a waste of a resource, because, you know, that's going, we're paying other countries to come take that and burn it in their incinerators, providing energy for their homes and businesses. And we think that this is something that Ireland should really be taking advantage of, you know, all the energy potential that we have in our own waste streams.
Yeah, because I think consumers or the general public feel a little bit let down to some extent, in that, you know, we have our black bin and our blue bin, as most listeners might understand. There is this sense often that it all just ends up in the one bin lorry, so why are we separating it to begin with? I'm not saying that happens routinely, but it certainly does happen, and then it's sorted at a later date. You know, we go to the clothes bank and dump our stuff in the clothes bank thinking we're doing the right thing, but that ends up lying in rivers and often, you know, dumped in an African country somewhere. You know, and we often, you know, we feel we're, I just feel like, you know, the public's being let down quite a bit, and it's not being called out as much as it should be, because lots of people do feel they're trying their best, they're doing the right thing, but then they're having to deal with this excess packaging and then no faith in what's happening with their waste when they dispose of it responsibly.
Yeah, I do agree. We're not going to be able to recycle our way out of this waste problem. We have a waste problem, and we have to reduce the amount that's generated. When you talk about clothes, there's been a huge change in how we use clothing. We have to stop buying fast fashion. We have to get more into repair. There's a repair directive coming out again for electrical goods, and we need to get more into reusing and repairing stuff. We need to stop trying to, you know, over-consume, because over-consumption leads to waste. But I think people need to be supported in this. We've seen in our waste characterisation study, although there's 2/3 of the waste in the general waste bin shouldn't be there, it should be in a brown bin or a recycling bin, when we go to apartments, it's much worse. So this shows to us that if people have a better system in place, you know, better bins, better segregation, they'll get on board. A lot of apartments don't have good segregation because they're not given a good waste system.
So do you think everyone should have to have a brown bin, for an example, which would be for
everyone should have to have a brown bin. From this year, it's law that all businesses can have a brown bin from July this year, and by the end of this year, which is just, you know, tomorrow basically, every household can have a brown bin. So you can get on to your waste operator and ask for a brown bin. And it has to be given to you. And I think it's important to remember that even that mucky, manky stuff in the bottom of your bin is a resource. You know, we can compost that. We can use the energy from it through anaerobic digestion. We can produce soil conditioners, and there's lots of companies doing that. So we need to get the material to them so that they can make this material circular, make it useful, make it a soil conditioner that we can actually use.
Yeah, so we're exporting a potential asset really too as well, though we want to reduce our overall
waste.
Well,
this is it. You know, we're taking stuff out of the earth using woods. It makes no sense. We need to circularise our economy. And that's the only way we're going to get out of this problem, because recycling on its own will not work. Recycling is important. We have targets. But I think people are beyond sort of caring about targets. They want to do something for their environment. They want to do something to reduce our climate emissions.
And again, to help us, you know, I mean, for a long time, if something went in your washing machine or your dryer, oh, parts aren't available for that, or they don't produce parts, but we've got this brand new one here for $299 or $399. You know, it's good for us that we can maybe start to get parts and repair things and keep them. You know, that's what we want, as consumers.
I mean, exactly. I think we all need to have a better relationship with our products rather than trying to get rid of them as soon as, you know, they need a slight repair. And I think we need businesses to get behind us and help us as individuals to manage our waste by not generating so much waste in the first place. There's reuse options that they could use, refill options that work in other countries. You know, they would often buy crates of water, fizzy water, whatever. They bring back the crates and the bottles the next week. And in effect, you're just buying the water rather than, you know, having to deal with, you know, the packaging that came with. And that's a reuse system. And I think more of that needs to happen to help householders and businesses to deal with their waste and reduce the amount of waste.
Celine, thanks for your time today. Have a lovely day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Celine Horner there, Senior Scientific Officer in the Circular Economy Programme at the EPA. Should we get to some of your comments here as we wrap up the show? Hi, Greg. I've noticed that there are a lot of female commentators on sport recently. Some are very good and knowledgeable, particularly those females who've played the sport at its highest level. However, there are other female commentators and presenters who are not quite up to the mark, and their observations and comments can be lacking in insight. It's not a gender issue, but rather a feeling error on the part of the broadcaster. in its haste to correct the gender imbalance. Some of the female commentators and pundits are being fast-tracked to appease the guardians of political correctness at the expense of good journalism. While this is happening, they're inadvertently showing some females in a poor light and doing a disservice to future female commentators and presenters. That comes in from Eugene. But Eugene, you'd hear, as well as all of us do, you know, some people can't stand certain commentators either, regardless of whether they're male or female. The government is slowly trying to take away our human right to have a say in what's right and wrong. It's all to protect the government so no one can say anything about or complain. It's to shut us up. If TDs would for once do as they promised at election times, the people would not be turning against them. But it's how one turns against it. You know, it's about at the ballot box rather than elsewhere, is it? The riots in Dublin were wrong, says the listener, but they were caused by the growing tension of government policies which treat Irish citizens and residents as second-class citizens. 12,000 homeless and growing over the last decade. It's 13 now, I believe. Meanwhile, 700 modular homes earmarked for Ukrainians in Dublin and Cork and over 100 in Sligo. In Blanchardstown in Dublin, there's been an African gang of youths hooded, wearing all black, armed with machetes, terrorising an area for years. But that's down to policing, isn't it? I mean, that shouldn't be the case. I'm not quite sure of all of that, but anyway. Look, at the end of the day, I don't think those ones that were out protesting, rioting last Thursday, are doing it for any political reasons or what have you. I think it just was opportunistic. The media seems to have deluded itself into believing that if people simply stopped talking about mass immigration, then public concern about the issue would go away. Hi, Greg. The Irish government is being made fun of on Twitter for how ridiculous and China's CCP like the new hate speech and facial technology they want. Even Elon Musk has noticed. Seems you can only have one opinion. The political elites and posh Dublin's opinions. Elon Musk is funny. He's held up as this... I mean, this fellow is the richest man in the world. He is the richest man in the world. He lives in an ivory tower. He has access to anything he wants. He can do whatever he wants. He can say whatever he wants. I mean, if I was looking for a hero, it wouldn't necessarily be he. He uses his platform for his benefit. The reason he's so opposed to hate speech, or one of the reasons is hate speech in inverted commas, is because advertisers won't advertise on his platform because of it. Now, some of the advertisers are too easy lobbied and make poor decisions. But he's not doing it for you. He's doing it for him. He's doing it to protect his 44 billion euro investment. You know, he's not just the hero you might think he is. VAR has made football hard to watch. I'm with you, Greg. Yeah, indeed, I think so. One of these Fridays before Christmas, we'll have a good manners day on the road for driving. I drive a school bus and people have no manners at all. It takes 2 seconds to let someone out. People have manners at roundabouts in Old Town. We should all have a Friday where we let people out. That comes in from Paddy McGettigan. Paddy, what should we call it? We need a catchy title. Friendly Fridays? Should we do a Friendly Friday where we're all polite and say hello and how are you getting on? And we wave to each other as we let you out and we say thank you for those being let out. Give the horn a wee toot or whatever it might be. I don't know. It's an idea. Friendly Fridays, we could call it. Congratulations, Tanya, and the Remelton Community Employment Scheme and everyone involved with contributing to the calendar production. You did great work around Remelton. Best of luck with your street sweeper, no better woman, Tanya, from a Remelton resident. I agree totally with Senator Eileen Flynn. Travellers and men especially are taking this avoidable option far too often, and it's not being highlighted and even worse addressed in an effective, joined-up thinking, evidence-based way. Following the documentary on Travellers, says another listener, it was apparent that he was bullied online. The first ad that came on after the show was for mobiles. The government have a lot to answer for. Children under 18 should not be allowed to have mobile phones. There's too much pressure on parents to buy them for children. Listen, thank you so much for all of your comments, and thank you very much for listening and watching the programme.